All right, let's go to the big prize. Let's
big kahuna.
Let's do this.
The big tuna.
First, the big tuna. That's actually what they're going to rename the prize this year, in at your prompting.
Le Grand Ton.
Yeah, I'm going to Le Grand Ton. We should give that award out. That should become a Houdinki thing.
I gotta stop.
Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverin, and this is Houdinki Radio. We're dropping this bonus episode on November 6th, which is the day before the 2019 GPHG Awards, which is the Grand Prix d'Horlogerie de Genève. It's kind of like the Oscars of watchmaking. We thought it'd be fun as a preview to get Ben, John, Cara, and myself in studio to talk about the watches that we would be voting for if we were on the jury. Our own editor-in-chief, Jack Forrester, is actually on the jury, so we couldn't have him participate for ethical reasons. But this should give you a pretty good sense heading into tomorrow's awards ceremony of which watches and which brands to look out for. You'll be able to stream the actual award ceremony on Houdinki.com, and we'll have tons of coverage afterwards to kind of wrap up the show. But if you want to get your feet wet and get a little sense of what to look for tomorrow, this is the ticket. Without further ado, your official preview of the 2019 GPHG. This bonus episode is brought to you by Ferdinand Berthoud and the Chronomet FB1L, an innovative watch with a celestial twist. For more, visit ferdinandberthoud.ch. All right, guys, it's bonus episode time.
Woo woo!
We got the Grand Prix coming up, GPHG. When people are hearing this, it'll be the week of the Grand Prix, a day or two before biggest awards in watchmaking.
Are you headed over there?
I will be, yeah. By the time people hear this, I will already be in Geneva for the awards, yeah.
Exciting stuff. Who are you going with?
I'm going with Jack, who is on the jury this year. And then Cole is also going to come with us.
Oh, no way.
Yeah,
that's
for the
so
first
cool.
time. It'll be Cole's first Grand Prix.
I feel like Jack was destined for a jury.
Yeah, he's basically a perfect fit, right, John?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And Ben, you used to be on the jury, right?
Yeah, until they kicked me off and gave my spot away to Jack.
That's how it goes, right?
I know, man.
Are you still bitter about that?
So bitter. So fucking pissed about that. Yeah.
What's, just to give people a quick overview before we get into this year's awards, as a former jury member, can you give us a brief overview of what the GPHG is?
Yeah, I mean, so basically it's the Oscars of watchmaking, or the closest thing to it. You know, basically brands submit whatever watch they want for any number of categories. All the jury members, of which I used to be one, get together in a room in Geneva the week before or a few days before and just debate all day about what is deserving of whatever. And then we would all vote in secrecy. And then the announcements would be given at the ceremony, which is not black tie, but very formal, which is a really Swiss thing. It's basically like the last degree of formalness before black tie.
Interesting.
And it's actually a huge faux pas to show up at this event in black tie.
Is it really?
It really is. It truly is.
Doesn't the host usually wear a tuxedo?
The host does, but Okay. Everybody else is in a dark suit. And if you wear a tux, you look like an idiot.
What if you wear a light suit?
Interesting. Well, they're Swiss. I don't know if they
should I try that this year? Is that going to be, that's going to be
a
bad?
A suit? Yeah. But yeah, so it's the most Genevan thing you could possibly imagine. It's the most Swiss thing you could possibly imagine. Super campy, super silly, but fun. I mean, it's the closest thing we have to the Academy Awards, and it's it at times it can be really meaningful. Other times it has almost no meaning. But you know, it's one of those things that the industry takes very seriously, and thus we take very seriously.
Yeah, it's. I have to say, I went for the first time last year, and it was strange to see all of those people from the industry in the same place. Mm. Like even at Baselworld or SIHH, it's still kind of like segmented. It was kind of strange to see like all of these people from like competing companies, different like big luxury groups, and then also like all the little independent watchmakers all kind of like gather in a room together.
Yeah, it's got to be the only place where everyone kind of comes under one roof at the same time, huh?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I can't really think of another.
There are a couple people missing though, notably.
Right. So Rolex does not participate. Tudor has in the past. I don't know if they are this year.
I believe they are.
They are, yeah.
I believe they are. Okay. Patek has not participated for as long as I've been around, which is 10 years plus. This is unverified, but somebody once told me that they once lost a category to H. Moser when H. Moser came out with that really, really innovative perpetual calendar, maybe 10, 12 years ago. And after that, they were just like, we're out, fuck it. which is a very Patek Philippe thing to do. I've also heard the same thing, about another brand after they lost to, I think, Seiko for some really innovative something or other. They thought they had lost to Citizen. Which is a different, entirely different company. So it, you know, it's not without its, you know, drama here and there.
Yeah,
for
politics.
Sure.
Of...
Yeah, for sure.
But Patek and Rolex would be the two big that do not participate.
Yeah. Right, right. And you know, you mentioned Seiko, and it is interesting being in a room full of like almost exclusively Swiss watchmaking executives and hearing a Seiko award announced. You kind of feel this like tremor go through the room. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the Swiss are very proud. I mean, they've got this thing called watchmaking, and they really, really take it very seriously. You know, I mean, Lange obviously makes among the best watches in the world, and there's always been some tension when Lange wins an award. I don't know if they're participating this year. You know, the Swiss, they take it seriously.
Yeah. So, all right, in the interest of keeping this moving, we've picked a couple key categories, kind of what we think are the most hotly contested categories, the categories we think people are most interested in. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through them, and we'll each give the watch that we think we would vote for if we were on the jury, and kind of debate that a little bit. And then at the end, for the big prize, the Grand Dagi, the sort of like grand prize of the whole night, we'll all say who we would want to win, and also who we think will win. Because I've got to say, it doesn't always line up exactly how personally I would vote. But let's just jump into it. So the first category we're going to do is the men's categories. This is a pretty open category. It's basically any watch that's marketed at men. They tend to be simpler, more like time only style watches. The six nominees here are Alchemist's Mechanical Healing CU29. The Debitoon DB28 Yellow Tones, the Grand Seiko Spring Drive Manual Winding in Platinum, the Groenfeld 1941 Principia Automatic, Laurent Ferrier's Bridge One, and the Voutilainen 28 Ti. Kari, you wanna go first on this one?
Yeah, I picked. It's not particularly innovative, but I picked the Groenfeld 1941 Principia Automatic, which is their traditional manual watch, but it's now automatic. I love those guys. I think their watches are incredible. The movements are amazing. That would be my pick.
All right, JB.
I also am going with the Groenfeld. If you know, for no other reason than with the exception of maybe the Grand Seiko, this is a watch that I could see myself wearing every day. And I think that's kind of what you're going for in the men's category, right? You're looking for like the best overall daily wear men's watch, and I think this one is that for me.
All right. Ben?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with these guys. I think, you know, this watch is immensely wearable, in particular in the steel case. It's self-winding. We actually had a guy in the office wearing this watch yesterday.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah.
The Grand Seiko is probably the watch I would buy first out of all of this, out of all these, rather. But the Groenfeld is I think, probably the highest quality men's watch here, for sure. And as Mr. Bew said, like, it's very wearable. The hand-hammered platinum hand-wound Seiko is just a different thing altogether. To me, that feels like it belongs in another category.
Yeah, I can't believe we're starting with a unanimous vote here.
Oh, wow.
But I'm also going Groenfeld for all the reasons you guys stated. It's wearable, it's beautiful. I think, Ben, I think you've described this before as having a movement that... It looks like a Lange chronograph, mm-hmm. but it's a time-only watch.
Yeah.
And you kind of get the best of both worlds there. So I would agree with Ben that the Grand Seiko is kind of a close second for me here, but I agree with you. That feels like kind of a different thing.
It's a fancy thing.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of fancy things, let's go to men's complication. So the six watches nominated here are the Audemars Piguet Code 1159 Minute Repeater Supersonnery, the Chapec Place Vendôme Ombre, the David Kando DC6 Solstice, the Ulysse Nardin Freak X, the Vacheron Constantin Overseas Tourbillon, and the Zenith Defy El Primero 21 Double Tourbillon. Let's go the other direction here. Ben, you want to kick us off here?
Yeah. So, I mean, never would I have guessed that I would be giving an award to the 1159 for anything this year. But I think here we are. You know, I mean, I think... This uses that RD1 caliber, that really incredible minute repeating caliber.
Yeah.
It's in a round case. This dial of all the 1159 dials, with maybe the exception of that really beautiful aventurine
QP,
perpetual calendar, is probably the nicest. Size is good. Sound is exceptional. Yeah, this is probably the one. I mean, my second place here would be the self-winding tourbillon in the Overseas, which is just an amazingly complex, beautiful movement that you can wear very easily because it's stainless steel, it's on a bracelet, etc. It's got this peripheral rotor. That's a really neat thing. The others are just not me. A lot of this stuff we've seen over the years from other folks. We've got some movements that are not necessarily produced in-house. This AP is, and the Vacheron 2 for that matter, are like really, really, you know, kind of tour de force showings from both, you know, AP and Vacheron. So I would go with the AP here.
Sweet. John?
Now, I'm just the reverse of Ben. So I have selected the Overseas Tourbillon, but I have in my little notes here that I made preparing for this recording that the Super Sonnery is a very close second.
Why the VC for you?
Well, as Ben said, it's a very wearable watch. I think it's interesting to see a tourbillon, which is not a complication that you associate necessarily with wearability or with everyday wear, put into a line and into a case that is like, as far as Vacherons go, like the ultimate everyday wear watch.
It is. And I think, you know, it's cool to see Vacheron kind of competing with the Royal Oak in this space. You know, like the steel Royal Oak Tourbillon has been kind of a benchmark of that brand for a long, long time, or at least the last few years. You know, the celebrities on the West Coast tend to choose that watch often. And it's nice to see Vacheron doing things their own way. And in my opinion, this is a much more impressive movement than what AP puts into their Tourbillon.
Yeah.
Self-winding, et cetera. So, yeah, neat watch.
Yeah. CB.
I also picked the 1159 because I do love a minute repeater. So that is why I went with that one. The other ones are just not, they just don't sing to me. Pun intended.
Ooh, there we go. We had to put some sort of sound effect in there. Great. That's on you, man.
That's really funny.
Yeah, I actually went with the VC Tourbillon. I am on the record many, many, many times having said that I'm not a Tourbillon guy. This just works for me. I agree with what Ben said. The movement is incredible. The fact that it's automatic with a peripheral rotor is really special. It seems like Vacheron didn't just do the thing they could have done here, which is like take whatever their sort of like base tourbillon movement is and just like stick it in an Overseas case. They did something really thoughtful here. And I think sort of maybe purposefully tried to outdo what AP and others are doing in this space. So I give them a hat tip there. And it's a watch that, when I put it on my wrist, I was like, oh, like I could actually wear this thing, which I really didn't expect. My sort of caveat would be, although the David Kandel watch is like not at all my speed, not at all something I would want to wear, I got a chance to see his work maybe 6 months ago. That is an exceptional piece of watchmaking. It's pretty wild. So I wouldn't be surprised if some folks on the jury kind of went that direction. Just kind of knowing how the tastes of the jury tend to skew. Next up, we're going to go to ladies' watches. So in the basic ladies' category, we've got the new Bulgari Serpenti Seduttori in pink gold with diamonds. We have the Chanel J12 Caliber 12.1. We have the Hermès Galop d'Hermès. We have the Hublot Classic Fusion Orlinsky Titanium Alternative Pavé. We have the Moritz Grossman Tefnut Arabian Nights Milanese and the Van Cleef & Arpels Perlet. So, Cara, take it away.
Because I'm a lady.
I mean, because you're sitting to my right. That's why. I'm just going to go back and forth.
I picked the J12, which looks exactly like the old one, but it's not. They made a lot of different tweaks to it this year. And it is hard to reinvent a classic. That really didn't have anything wrong with it at all. But the movements on the Chanel watches, I think, have become really, really beautiful, and they've really focused on them, working with Romain Gauthier and other people in the watch industry, and they really take their investment in their timepieces seriously. So that's why I'm going with the J12.
All right, John Buse.
I'm going to go with the Bulgari, the Serpenti Seduttori. I mean, the Serpenti is just such an original design. There's nothing else that is quite like it out there. And I think it's a wonderful watch design.
Mr. Clymer.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go with Chanel as well, just because, you know, the Hermes and the Bulgari, I think, are more beautiful and more interesting, but they're both quartz. And I think, you know, the just knowing what I know about the jury, like, they won't have any of that. You know what I mean? The Chanel is interesting because this uses that movement that they basically co-designed with Tudor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a nice one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Looking at these watches, I hadn't thought about the fact that both the Bulgari and the Hermes are quartz, but I'm still, I think, going to go with the Hermes here, the Galope d'Hermes, which was designed by former Hodinkee Radio guest Inny Archibong. It's just the sort of, like, even if you remove the watchmaking component, for me, the industrial design on this is incredible. The shape of the case, the way the crystal is curved, the way the dials are done, the typography is custom for the numerals. It's just like a really thoughtfully designed product that feels like something a lot of people are going to want to wear. So I think this one maybe our most divisive yet, maybe.
Yeah, I would say so.
Let's go back to more complicated things. Let's go to the category called mechanical exception. This is kind of the high complications, most complicated pieces submitted. And this is I think, going to be a pretty competitive category this year. The six watches are the Audemars Piguet Royal Oak Self-Winding Perpetual Calendar Ultra Thin, which is the watch that many people probably know as the RD2. This is the sort of, like, commercialized version of the RD2. Then we have the Bulgari Octoroma Grand Sonnery Perpetual Calendar. We have the Genis GNS 1.2. We have the Ulysse Nardin Freak Next. We have the Erwerk AMC. And we have the Vacheron Constantin Traditionnel Twin Beat Perpetual Calendar. John, let's start with you on this one.
Oh, I'm going to go with the Royal Oak Self-Winding Perpetual Calendar Ultra Thin. It's obviously a huge accomplishment as a complication to be able to make a perpetual calendar so thin. They were able to achieve it by basically simplifying the layout of the wheels on a perpetual calendar, and they did a great job with that. And it's a watch that I would like to wear, so I'm going to pick that one.
Ben,
again, I mean, my answer is different than what I would actually spend my money on. Would I buy the Royal Oak? 100%. Does that deserve to win here? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it is an amazingly innovative watch and, you know, really kind of reframes what an ultra slim perpetual calendar can be. The Vacheron is a little gimmicky, but pretty neat as well. But I think the Erwerk here is really exceptional. And I think that's what we're talking about in this category. They basically created a master slave device here with a watch that sits into a clock and vice versa. And they reset each other. It's pretty wild. It really is.
Yeah. Kara?
I'm going with AP, like John. I think the perpetual calendar complication is hard enough to make, so making something even thinner and automatic is really impressive to me. Again, with the theme of recreating something that's already been kind of perfected, I think it's a really interesting quality.
Interesting. So I'm going to kind of split the difference between you guys, and I'm going to go with the VC, I think. I agree with Ben. I think the Twin Beat idea is a little bit gimmicky. You know, I'm not quite sure how useful it is in practice. But I think the concept is really fascinating. I like that Vacheron is doing things like this, that they're investing in this kind of R&D. And it'd be nice to see them get a little bit of a reward for this. You know, it's something that I can't really think of too many other watchmakers who would try something like this.
Agreed.
This bonus episode is brought to you by Ferdinand Berthoud. The modern Ferdinand Berthoud brand launched in 2013 with the goal of making complex watches focused on precise chronometry, much like its namesake, an 18th century master of the marine chronometer. The brand's first watch, the FB1, took home the prestigious top prize, the Aiguille d'Or, at the 2016 Grand Prix d'Horlogerie de Genève. Carrying through much of the FB1's DNA is the new FB1L, a watch that shows the time as well as the phase and age of the moon, inspired by scientific exploration and the spirit of the Enlightenment. The FB1L has Ferdinand Berthoud's signature 44mm octagonal case design with a round, spacious dial at the center. The hours and minutes are displayed at 12 o'clock, with a large central seconds hand emphasizing the watch's focus on precision. New, though, are the age of the moon and the phase of the moon displays, both of which reside in the bottom half of the dial. These displays deviate just one day every 577 years, making them some of the more accurate astronomical complications on the market today. All of this is powered by the Caliber FB TFCL, an in-house movement that is both technically brilliant and beautifully finished. The power barrel and constant force Fusain chain mechanism are both open so you can see them functioning, and the 1 minute tourbillon has an impossibly delicate looking cage that seems to float down at 6 o'clock. It's a true tour de force of modern watchmaking. Only 20 of these watches will be made in total, 10 with a combination white gold and black ceramic case, and 10 with a combination ceramized titanium and white gold case. This is a truly unique watch built for collectors who crave something special. For more on Ferdinand Berthoud and the Chronomet FB1L, visit ferdinandberthoud.ch. All right, let's get back to the show. Maybe the most popular category of watches for a lot of people is chronographs. So let's take a look at the chronograph category.
We're all going to pick the Bulgari, right?
We're all going to pick the Bulgari.
So like, do you need to talk about this one?
I'm going
to
read them out. Well, let's talk about why we're all going to pick the Bulgari. But I looked at this and I had to say, like, this usually is one of the most exciting categories. And this year I looked at it and was like, this isn't even close.
It's not.
Yeah, no.
So the six watches are the Bulgari, which is the Octofinissimo Chronograph GMT Automatic, the Chopard LUC Chrono 1 Flyback, the Hublot Classic Fusion Ferrari GT 3D Carbon, the Louis Monet Chronosphere, the Tag Heuer Carrera Tourbillon Nanograph, and the Zenith Defile Primero 21 Carbon. Somehow we have three out of the six watches are made of carbon. I don't have any idea why that is, but
carbon's trending.
Carbon's obviously trending. All right, why Ben did we all pick the Bulgari?
It's the best.
It is.
I mean, I think it's the best Octofinissimo yet, too.
Yeah. I would say it's up there. I mean, it's a little wider than the other ones. That would be my only criticism of it. But the chronograph is so slim. It's GMT. Yeah. We all love this line of watches. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I like the click of the chronograph buttons.
You like the click of the chronograph
buttons?
Yes,
I think that's the sign of a good chronograph.
Yeah, I would agree. One of the things I think is interesting about these chronograph buttons is that they are not angled at all. Like, because of the geometry of the Octo case, they actually push directly into the side, which when I first picked the watch up, I thought might be a little weird and uncomfortable, but it actually turns out it works perfectly. It's not a problem at all. Yeah, this watch is awesome. I think there's a lot of people, not even just the four of us around this office who want one of these.
Yes, it's a popular pick.
Yeah, it's a great watch. I reviewed it at length. I did a week on the wrist with it.
Oh, yeah, did. We'll link that up in the show notes.
And I did not want to give it back. It was like the kind of watch where I was like, yeah, this totally makes sense. I should have this.
So what's like,
nice. You should have this.
Yeah, yeah. You deserve it, John.
Yeah, you work hard, John. What's kind of like the TLDR on this, right? Like if you wanted to give people like two or three sentences that encapsulate like what this watch is about and what it's like wearing it.
TLDR.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Too long, didn't read.
For the record, I knew that. I just didn't think our readers would know.
I had
okay.
no idea.
Okay, sorry about that.
I had no clue.
So what's your two or three sentence synopsis of like what this watch is about?
This watch is super thin, and it has the complication that I think is the most fun to use, a chronograph, play around with, time your lunch break, and the chronograph and the complication that is the most useful, a GMT. This is a perfect everyday watch.
I mean, can't argue with any of that. Yeah. Let's kind of go the other direction now. So we're going to go to the watches that are more budget-focused. So the Petite Aiguille, which is under, I think it's 7,000 Swiss francs.
What does that mean, the Petite Aiguille? It's a small hand.
Small hand. Little baby hand.
Tiny hand.
Freakishly small hand.
Unbelievably diminutive hand. So the six watches here are the David Rutten Meteorite Watches Streamline, the IWC Pilot's Watch Chronograph Spitfire in bronze, the Kudoke 2, the Maurice Lacroix Akon Mercury, the Trilobe Les Matinaux Sunray Gray, and the Zenith Pilot Type 20 Full Silver.
Can you say the third one again?
Kudoke 2.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kudoke.
Do you like that?
Yes. Kudoke?
It might be pronounced like
that. That actually brings me a lot of joy when
you
say that.
I honestly have never said this word out loud until right now. So,
yeah, no, that's clear.
If I said it wrong, come at me in the comments on Houdinki and please let me know because I genuinely have no idea.
My own joke. Okay, moving on.
That's really funny.
Sweet. So what are we going with here, Cara?
I like the IWC.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna say it's the best looking one out of all of them, and that's why I chose it.
That's completely fair and completely accurate.
Yeah, that's
so. You're right. That's it.
That's totally reasonable, John.
I'm also going with the IWC, and frankly, I was surprised to see IWC competing in this category. you know?
Yeah.
I think it's the best watch of the six. So I'm going to go with that one.
Yeah. Ben?
Yeah, again, I mean, if I had to put my dollars down here, it'd be for the IWC as well. The Kodoki, I know, as I mentioned on the site, Wes Lang is a big, big fan of these guys. He's a pretty well-known artist, and he does the column for GQ. He likes them, so I imagine that they've got to be pretty good. But I will admit, I don't know much about them. So realistically, the IWC.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the IWC too. You know, we have another unanimous category here. I think these new Spitfire watches in general, not just the chronograph, are awesome. They're priced really well. They have new in-house movements. They're sized nicely. They're a little smaller than the sort of mainline Mark watches. So the time and date is 39 millimeters and the chronograph is 41 millimeters. And they're super wearable. They're great everyday watches. And this bronze and green combo is pretty good looking.
Yeah,
right?
It looks good. Looks good.
All right. Now the other budget category, which is the challenge category, which is even less expensive. I believe this is under 5,000 or 4,000 Swiss francs. The six watches we have are, I think it's pronounced Sega design, single-handed mechanical wristwatch series Globe. Great, great name, guys. The Doxa Sub 200, the Gorilla Watches Fastback GT Drift, the Ming 17.06 Copper, the Seiko Presage Arita Porcelain Dial, and the Tudor Black Bay P01. John, how about you kick this one off?
You know, I'm looking at all six of them right now, and the Ming is really nice. I'm a big fan of what Ming does. However, this color scheme is not my favorite of what I've seen from them. I'm going to go with the Seiko. I would imagine that probably one or two of you would also be going with the Seiko. I really like what Seiko and with their Presage line, what they do with these porcelain dials or with these special dials. You get a real, you know, without spending a ton of money, you can get something really handmade, something that is like really traditionally Japanese, and it just doesn't cost that much. So it's like an affordable watch that offers something really special. So yeah, I'm going to go with the Presage Arita porcelain dial.
Nice. Ben?
So for this one, I agree with John. The Seiko is pretty great, but I'm going to go with the Tudor. I like the idea here. I like that you know, Rolex continues to use Tudor as kind of this like lab for really kind of crazy things, and this is a crazy watch. I like the controversy that came with it. The Seiko is wonderful for sure. Presage with the porcelain dial is a really neat, really Japanese thing. The snob in me looks at these porcelain dials and just like can't focus on how low quality they are relative to the porcelain dials that you see in other things, like on a Creedor, you know. And I know we're talking 50 times the price, but you know, if you're gonna go for something like this, it feels like you just don't need the porcelain dial at this point if you're not gonna do it the right way. So for that reason and many others, I'm gonna go with the Tudor.
Kara?
I'm also going with the Tudor because this is the Oscars of watches after all, and usually the weirdest thing wins. So for me,
is that okay. How the Academy Awards work?
That is how okay. I came up with this okay. one. But yeah, I like the I like that watch. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's super weird, and it just like doesn't. I don't know. It doesn't like fit into everyday life. Except I did talk to someone the other day who's on the wait list for one and can't wait to get it.
I talked to somebody yesterday who owns one. He got it like 4 or 5 days ago before we recorded this and loves it. Like he's been wearing it around.
Maybe it's the same person.
Maybe. We'll talk about it off.
Is it Beyonce?
Yes.
It is Beyonce. Damn, Ben.
Actually, it was Gaga.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I almost went with the P01 on this. I'm still kind of up in the air, but I'll give my vote to Ming. I agree with John. The 1706 is not my favorite Ming watch, and I know this isn't like voting on brand, it's voting on the product, but I kind of like that they're like a little upstart brand. They're doing their own thing. I do think they're pretty good value for money in most cases. And, you know, it'd be nice to see a little guy take home a prize.
So nobody else went with the Seiko. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
that's
I like
okay.
the Seiko a
Everyone's
lot.
Everyone's entitled to their own opinions. Absolutely. This is what the voting is all about.
I'm also pretty sure this watch with a blue dial was in this category last year.
The Ming.
No, the Seiko.
Seiko.
I believe you're right, actually.
Or
yeah.
Something similar, if not last year, than the year before. Huh. I guess what I'm trying to say is like it's just nothing new. They've been doing this for a few years now, so it's like, all right, the P01 is like really different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
The Seiko's a great watch. I mean, we sell that watch. It's just a different thing.
Yeah. There are some new categories this year, so I want to make sure we touch on those. We're not going to get to every category, but there are two new categories, one of which is the iconic watch. So this has to be a take on something that a brand's been doing for a long time. I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory. It's sort of something new that's a riff on something classic or iconic or well-known. So the six watches we have are the AP Royal Oak Jumbo Extra Thin, the version in white gold with a salmon dial, the Jura Perigo Quasar, the Hamilton Intramatic Automatic Chronograph, the IWC Tribute to Paul Weber Edition 150 Years, the Tag Heuer Monaco 80s, and the Zenith El Primero 50th Anniversary A384 Revival. Ben, how about you start us off here?
I mean, the Royal Oak is certainly going to win. Like, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
A lot of these don't really feel like icons or whatever we're calling them. The Monaco and the El Primero certainly are. The Royal Oak certainly is. The other ones, I would say, less so. The El Primero that Zenith chose to submit here, I don't think is the strongest choice. I think, you know, a more A386 look or even the G381 look would be a little bit more appealing. And on the Monaco, I think they chose the 1980s dial, which is what, brown?
It's red.
It's red. Yeah, again, that just doesn't feel like really Monaco-y, you know? Whereas the 15202, even in white gold, which kind of goes against everything that the Royal Oak stood for back then, is just, it's a killer. And on top of that, like, you know, when you speak of like watches that are really sought after right now, like this is right up there. Like these you cannot get. They're trading double retail, which means that's $100,000 for a Royal Oak. I think that's probably the one that I'd go with.
Yeah. Cara?
Yeah, I gotta agree. Sorry, I feel like I'm just repeating everything that everybody else is saying, but I agree with the AP. I mean, it's truly iconic in this every sense of the word, in my humble opinion.
I'm gonna jump here and say me too. So John, you gonna make this unanimous?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I do have to make it unanimous.
I was hoping you'd come in and be like,
well, I mean, I was hoping John was going to come and be like, you're all idiots. The Hamilton, for sure.
The Hamilton's a great watch.
No, the Hamilton is a super good watch.
Yeah, the Hamilton's an amazing watch, yeah.
No, there's nothing wrong with the other watches. It's just hard to compete with the Royal Oak. It's kind of like, okay, well...
Yeah,
and again, like, it is like one of the most iconic designs of all time.
The way you compete is you put a Nautilus in there, or you compete a Submariner in there, or a Seamaster, or whatever. Like then you've got real competition. But right now, it's like it's not really fair.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Also, I think this is just a way for them to kind of squeeze in some like more neutral designs as far as the other categories.
It's an interesting point though that Ben made. If it had been another Monaco and if it had been another El Primero, it could have been a very different
completely. And the thing is, like, you know obviously this 15202 BC came out this year, so that's why they put it in here, but like even that's kind of an odd choice.
Yeah,
right? Like it's the whole point of the Royal Oak is that it's steel. Like that's literally the whole point of that watch. So to feature one in white gold is a little odd, but great watch.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is in this category, like, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah, they're all
like,
great.
They're all really great watches. All right, another new category. We're going to do the divers category. So the six watches are the Debethune DB28GS Grand Bleu, the Longines Hydro Conquest, the Reservoir Hydrosphere Blackfin, the Resonance Type 5, the Seiko Prospex LX Divers Line, and the Ulysse Nardin Diver Great White. Cara, you want to start?
I'm going to go with the Debethune because that case is so cool.
I did not expect that.
I know. I'm coming
she
out of left field.
She wears one on the weekends.
Yeah.
Really?
It's just people don't know about it.
You're a secret Debethune collector?
Yeah, a secret, major, massive collection of Debethunes. No, that case is really cool. I remember seeing
it's
James,
awesome.
And it's like bendy and the lugs move, and it's just kind of like, it's like,
Cara is, for the record, like throwing her hands up in the air repeatedly.
It's just like a cool thing. It's just like, who needs a Debethune dive watch? Nobody, but maybe I do. I don't know. Like, that's kind of how I feel about that.
Yeah.
So that's my choice.
I'm going to go with the Resonance Type 5. I love the way I think it's, you know, the best looking watch of the lot. And I love the fact that it is able to look like that, be constructed the way it is, and still meet all of the, you know, the requisite demands to meet the ISO 6425.
All right. Coming out of the gate with two kind of weird choices. I like this. Ben.
I'm going with Buse here.
You're going with Buse.
Yeah, the Resonance is a neat thing.
Interesting.
It's just a totally different type of dive watch.
Yeah. I'm going to go super boring. I think Seiko here. I like that prospect. I know, but it's like, it's again, we talk about like core competencies. Yeah. Like
they're good at that.
Yeah, Seiko making a like tough as nails, affordable spring drive dive watch is just like, it's a good thing. Like, why mess with the formula?
Agreed.
The Resonance is way more interesting. The Debethune is way more interesting. But, like, Seiko's great. And a lot of people are going to buy them and like them. So, all right. Let's go to the big prize. Let's
big kahuna.
Let's do this.
Big tuna.
First, the big tuna. That's actually what they're going to rename the prize this year in at your prompting.
Le Grand Ton.
Yeah, I'm going to... Le Grand Ton. We should give that award out. That should become a Houdinki thing.
I gotta stop. Okay.
Should we, after the Grand Prix, take the watch that we think got like the shortest shaft, like the one that got shortchanged
like
the most? The watch that should have won but didn't becomes Le Grand Ton.
Le Grand Ton.
All right, we'll do that on the next in the recap episode.
I hope that's tuna ton. I think it is.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
You're good there. All right, so let's start by picking what you would vote for, like what you would want to win, and then we'll go back and kind of try to like actually guess. We'll put some skin in the game here and guess what we think is going to win. So, John, let's start us off. What are you voting for to take home the big prize?
Now, this is very difficult because obviously you're comparing, you know, wildly different types of watches across all the different categories.
I think you're up to the task.
Right. But looking over, you know, the full range of choices here, I'm going to go with the Hermes Arceau L'Or de la Lune, which I think is just
interesting.
Beautiful watch.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that's competing in the calendar and astronomy category, which we didn't cover, just so people know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my choice.
Interesting. Okay.
Sounds like probably no one else picked that one.
No,
I doubt
I didn't.
It. It's a strong choice.
I didn't. I'm now rethinking my choice.
Mr. Clymer.
I'm going back to the Urwerk.
Okay.
I don't think you guys know what this thing is. Like, this is a totally crazy thing where, like, it's got a base that uses the atomic clock, and then every time you set the watch into
it's
reset.
Thing.
Yeah.
It's like Breguet's
the Sympathique.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a nuts thing, and nobody's done anything like it. And again, knowing what I know about the jury, there are several Urwerk diehards on the jury. I think there's a good chance that could take it home if people start talking about it.
But that's supposed to be your next pick is for what you think will win, not what you want to win.
They can be the same.
I think it's the same for
me.
I mean, what are the dynamics like on the jury? Are people trying to sway each other?
Is it cutthroat?
There's a lot of egos and there's a lot of like people just talking over each other like you would expect, you know? But yeah, there are people that do try to like plead the case for so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a little tricky because like, oh, you find out that person X used to work for so-and-so or they went to school. But I mean, like that's true with anything, true with the Academy Awards even, you know? But yeah, there is definitely like some lobbying that goes on.
Are there like Swiss chocolate bribes and stuff?
Not so much that. Chocolate's pretty abundant over there.
All right.
you know, I mean, people take it really seriously. And like, you know, and the other thing that I like about the Urwerk pick, if I can say, is that like, it's meaningful to them. You know, if AP wins, who cares?
Yeah.
You still can't get a Royal Oak. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, Groenfeld, when they won, that was a really meaningful thing. Yeah. Laurent Ferrier was put on the map by winning this thing. I think a Crivia won last year, right?
Yep.
And that was a big deal for Rex. So, you know, again, Urwerk has been around forever. They're doing great. They don't necessarily need the help, but they're also like, they're not AP. They're not Vacheron. Like, it, you know, an award like this is a really meaningful thing, and I think well-deserved in this case.
Interesting. Awesome. Kara?
Okay, well, I would like the Bulgari GMT Chrono to win, but I think that the AP RD2 will win. But I also don't know what the inner workings are like. I also would like to give an honorable mention to the MB&F Ladies Watch this year.
Oh, yeah. So that's a watch. So let's talk about
that
watch.
Because that was in a different... That was in Ladies Complication.
Yeah, which we didn't cover
ladies.
Just because we had to cut some categories to keep this at a reasonable time. Otherwise, we'd be here for two
forever.
Hours. But yeah, the MB&F Legacy Machine Flying T in the Ladies Complication category, to me, is a no-brainer for that category.
Yeah, they would get the Grand Ton.
The Grand
me.
Ton. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with, this was a tough one, but I think maybe the RD2. And I agree with Ben that it's not meaningful for AP, but I kind of like that this is a super over-engineered watch. It's super complicated. There's tons of innovations in it, but it's also like really consumer-friendly. There's something nice about the idea that like you can know a ton about watchmaking or you could know nothing about watchmaking, and this watch is kind of equally appealing. It kind of has something for everyone. It's really wearable. You know, I've had some issues in the past where like some of these watches that win, especially the big prizes, the Grand Augie and others, where like it's, you know, a 46mm watch that's $400,000. They make three a year. And like, it's like almost a concept. It's like not even really a product in the like proper sense. Whereas I kind of like that these are limited, but it's like a real product. Like people will buy them and wear them. And it's kind of a mix of like AP's sort of like cool kid status and also AP's fine watchmaking abilities. So that said, I don't think it's going to win. I think the VC is going to win.
I can see that.
I think the jury, like you were saying, Ben, like, you know, people have various interests. And I think, you know, giving the prize to a big brand like Vacheron in some ways will be appealing to a lot of people.
Maybe.
And the fact that it's a big brand doing something that's like highly technical, highly watch nerdy. I don't know.
I could see
guess. It. I could also see the Urwerk winning. Honestly, I hadn't thought nearly hard enough about the Urwerk coming into this. I think that's my takeaway from this recording.
Thanks for enlightening us.
Sometimes you got to talk to Ben Clymer if you want to get the real.
Before
the
you
real
make
scoop.
Any decisions in life, just give me a call.
All right, that's good. You know? Honestly, I kind of do. So yeah.
should I buy this shirt?
Yeah, you know? That conversation has happened. Yeah. Just so everyone knows. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a pretty interesting year. There's some good watches, some good categories. I think some good competition. I think there's a lot of categories where like. There are maybe two or three standouts, and hopefully the voting will be tight.
Agreed.
Awesome. So we're going to circle up some of the same members of the team, some different members of the team after the awards, and we're going to kind of go over, and by the time you hear that episode, you'll know whether our predictions and our preferences were right, wrong, both, indifferent, I don't know. But we'll be back at you.
Live podcasting from... the room.
So we're not going to do any live podcasting from the room. We will have live coverage on Hodinkee.com. So you'll be able to live stream the Grand Prix as always from Hodinkee.com while it's happening. So it'll be at 6:30 p.m. Swiss time, which that's when the ceremony starts. It may usually gets off a little late, and then it takes about an hour and a half or 2 hours. We'll have tons of live coverage on Instagram and Instagram stories. We'll have coverage immediately after the awards of who the big winners were. And then the week after, we're going to take some time, give it a couple days to sink in, and then do a little bit of a recap after everybody's had some time to process. So that'll come next week.
Love it.
Cool.
Awesome.
Can't wait.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Big time.
Thank you.
Today's episode was recorded at Hodinkee HQ in New York City and was produced and edited by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Monday with a full episode.